The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 832. It's 27th of July, 2017. On the podcast today, Greg Kunzel, Managing Director, and Martin Churchhouse, Technical Director of Georgian Mining Corporation. That's GEO ticker. And they discuss today's news regarding their resource upgrade at Kavimba Bolnese East. Also on the podcast, Keith Alone, Executive Chairman of Powerhouse Energy Group. PHE is a ticker. And Keith explains the company's waste-to-energy technology and its potential. And I've got to say, very interesting. And especially in light of recent movement by the government to ban diesel and petrol engines by 2040 and other governments around the world as well. So worth a listen to that, I believe. Also on the podcast, Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, covers some FTSE 100 big heavyweights who released some news today. AstraZeneca, AZN, down 15%. I don't know where they are. Earlier on, they were down 15%. I don't know where they are at the moment. Royal Dutch Shell also had results out. And Lloyds Banking Group. Chris covers all three of those. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs released by the platform this morning.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Greg Kunzel, Managing Director, and Martin Churchhouse, Technical Director of Georgian Mining Corporation. Ticker there is GEO. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Justin.
And normally you're flying solo, and Martin, nice to have you along as well.
Yep, good to be here, Justin.
Well, you've been a busy boy, busy couple of boys this week, I suppose, a couple of releases you've had, so we'll get into that in a bit, Greg. But as always, for people new to the podcast or have not heard of the company, give a brief summary as to what Georgian Mining is all about, please.
Sure. Georgian Mining Corporation is an AIM-listed company. We're focused on an 860-square-kilometre mining licence in Georgia. We have a current focus being the Kavimba Bolnese project, which we believe has the potential to be a significant copper gold play in Georgia.
Excellent stuff. Okay, so let's go back to earlier in the week, and you released an RNS entitled Exploration Update at Kavimba Bolnese East and Regional Targets. Take us through the detail, please, Greg, of that, if you will.
Yeah, and Justin, Tuesday's announcement was more just a general update on what's going on at the moment. We're currently drilling at Gold Zone 1, which is one of three targets we have at KB. We've previously only tested Gold Zone 1 down to 10 metres last year. So given the success we've been getting in the rest of the KB area, we've decided to start drilling a little deeper there to see what's sitting under the gold oxide cap. We recently completed infill drilling at Gold Zone 2. We're currently finalising the mining feasibility study, which is the document that's going to be required to put in place a production agreement with our partner. So work's continuing. We've had a slight delay in some of our drilling that's been done over the last few weeks. We share a sample prep facility with our partner in Bolnese. It reduces our costs significantly when sending assays off to Ireland to the lab for assay. However, there has been a little bit of a backlog in the last couple of weeks, so we've got a few samples waiting there ready to be prepped to be sent off for assay. They're now underway, so we should hopefully clear those over the next couple of weeks and start getting some more drilling results out.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, let's move forward to the day. And you've got some more news out, significant copper resource upgrade. And take us through the highlights of this, please, Greg.
I might pass on to Martin to run through today's announcement. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Today's announcement is a resource estimate update. People will know that we have two mineralization types at KB. We have at and near surface, we have the gold oxides. And then sitting underneath the gold oxides, we have copper sulfide gold mineralization. This particular announcement is the estimation work that's been done on the second of the breccia pipes that we discovered. The first one we reported some time ago. The second pipe is the one that's located Gold Zone 2. If we now take the global JORC compliant tonnage of for copper at KB, it's now just in excess of 3 million tonnes at 0.82% copper. More importantly, the in-pit optimised constrained resource is 1.7 million tonnes at just over 1% copper. Both of the pipes that we have discovered and partially drilled out remain open at depth. I think perhaps the most exciting thing, particularly with this new discovery at Gold Zone 2, is that some of the interceptions that we made with drilling have returned some extremely high grades. We had intercepts of just over 15% copper over 16 meters. 12 meters at 3.5% and others at 45 meters at 1.5% copper with nice gold grades as well. So at some point in the near future, once we've completed the balance of drilling around Gold Zone 2, which Greg mentioned we're currently doing, we will then put some more holes into particularly the Gold Zone 2 copper breccia pipe. Chase that down to depth and put some additional holes in between the existing drilling so that we can upgrade that resource further, particularly in terms of grade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're looking at targeting what total resource of what size there?
We had a three-stage or three-phase program which we put in place a year ago. First of all, it was to get 1 million tons of copper ore at 1% and 1 million tons of gold ore also at 1 gram in order to meet the sort of initial guidelines set by our partner. Thereafter, we set ourselves a target during the course of this year to get a global tonnage in situ, in pit optimized of 5 million tons of combined gold oxide and copper sulfide mineralization. And based on the work that we have done to date, we now know that we're sitting in a low sulfidation epithermal system, and we're targeting now a 50 million ton resource. So that'll be the next stage.
Yeah. And is it possible to say over what period of time this will take, this exploration?
It's an ongoing program, so it's really just a case of getting to a point where we generate the requisite tons at the right grade for us to be able to meet the initial requirements of our partner in terms of putting ore into some of the local plants, and then deciding on whether it's better for us to continue to use existing infrastructure, or if the plant, or if the resource rather, gets to a certain size where it will start to make sense for us to consider putting our own plant together on site. So it's a difficult one to answer. It rather depends on what we find with the next few thousand meters of drilling.
Yeah, but so far, from your point of view, are you happy with what's been going on here, what you're discovering here?
Very much so. It's what's starting to come together now is that we're finding these higher grade discrete breccia pipes, and we're finding mineralization, in the oxide, gold oxide sitting over the top, which we would have to remove anyway in order to access the copper sulfides. And we're also now finding lower grade copper sulfide mineralization sitting between these pipes. So, you know, if we can continue to find these high-grade structures, then they're actually acting as the framework that allows us to stitch together a much bigger resource.
Excellent stuff. Okay, and just for people listening, so what is the next sort of major milestone they can expect from Georgian Mining Corporation?
The next one is to achieve the 5 million tonnes optimised sort of combined resource. Mm-hmm. Then we move on to start to build the tonnage from there.
Excellent stuff. Okay, good to speak to you, Martin. And back to Greg. Greg, I mean, how are you feeling about these latest set of results? Are you bullish on them?
Very much so, Justin. I mean, these are fantastic results, and we think we've not only met our initial target, but we're right on course to exceed them well before the timetable we had set in place. We're in a very sort of beneficial position here in that we've got a very big prospective target at KB, but in the short term, both on the gold oxides and the copper gold sulfide, we have this potential to move into the near-term production to fund a large portion, if not all, of the ongoing exploration on the bigger target internally. We've made a heck of a lot of progress in the last 6 months particularly. Again, part of that is down to the fact that on this smaller production target we've got, unlike most companies that have to go through proving up a large enough resource to then move to feasibility stages, to then move to bankable stages so they can look at getting the financing to build their own plant, we've been able to cut out a significant portion of that cycle and effectively move from an initial modest, and to be honest, if you had to fund your own plant, it probably wouldn't justify it. But for us, it more than satisfies the requirements of our partners' plants. So we've been able to move from that small target, that initial stage, I should say, right up to we're right at the pre-production stage now, by doing a lot of that work internally, which has not only saved a lot of money, but it's been able to accelerate the process significantly.
Absolutely, good work, guys. Okay, well, as you know, Greg, as always on the podcast, I do highlight the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets. So if someone's listening right now and they like what you're talking about but are not following you yet on Vox Markets, could you give them those 3 reasons why they should hit that follow button, please?
Sure. Look, Georgian Mining's operating in a well-established copper-gold region, very prospective area, in a mining-friendly jurisdiction. We have the potential, we believe, to have not just one but multiple significant discoveries here within our 860 square kilometre mining licence. And we have the potential to fund a lot of that larger scale exploration from internally generated cash flow from our planned production.
Excellent stuff. Guys, good to speak to you, Martin and Greg, and hopefully speak again very soon. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks, Justin.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Keith Allon, Executive Chairman of Powerhouse Energy. That's PHE ticker. Keith, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Justin. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, I've been reading about your company, very interested, and it seems like it's super future-proof by the looks of it. But for people not aware of your company, Keith, can you explain what it's all about, please, in summary?
Sure. In summary, we've created the concept of distributed modular gasification, which allows us to transform rubbish into both electricity and hydrogen in a distributed manner and provide a commodity to the community where it's needed.
Do you know what? It seems like something from Back to the Future, you know, where
exactly.
it's when they have that capacitor that you can put anything in and it'll change it into energy. But it's amazing when you do this. And so when you say waste, what kinds of waste can you convert?
Sure. Yeah, industrial construction waste, municipal solid waste. We want to take the organic components of the waste stream that still have a calorific value and extract that calorific value. In fact, our synthesis gas that we create extracts somewhere in the neighborhood of 90 to 95% of the calorific value of the waste stream as it goes through our ultra-high temperature gasification process.
Okay, and basic questions is, that seems amazing, but so where will the energy go, and what are you hoping to fuel here?
Yeah, it's, well, that's a great question. The energy, the fact is that the demand for energy, the demand for electricity, the demand for, the growing demand for alternatives to existing electrical infrastructure is huge. And so our ability to create electricity in a distributed fashion, utilizing a resource that continues to grow, which is the public waste stream, and to eliminate that waste stream from landfill, to divert it from landfill, to gasify it and capture the energy value of that in an extremely efficient and ecological manner, and in a very low carbon manner, and produce both electricity for local grids, for private wire, and as the demand for hydrogen continues to grow, to be able to create distributed hydrogen for road fuel. The fact is that you can, we envision the ability to see petrol, the same as petrol stations, mm-hmm. Only being hydrogen refueling stations that are operating on our distributed modular gasification concept.
Yeah, well, do you know what's very interesting? I mean, yesterday obviously hit the headlines of the UK government hoping to ban all petrol and diesel engines by 2040, and they're not the first country to do this. I think Norway is hoping to do it by 2025, and I think India 2030, and France the same as us 2040. So they're all going towards clean fuel and banning, you know, diesel and petrol. So there's a huge market here, and this is a massive sea change. And I suggested on social media, I said, so where's the electricity coming from? I said, we know it's going to be a huge increase in electricity needed for everyone, you know, driving. And someone did suggest hydrogen. And I thought, I've heard of hydrogen before, but how close are we to it being, you know, an accepted means of travel?
Yeah, that's a great question. The fact is that Toyota, Volvo, Daimler, Hyundai, BMW are all making massive commitments to hydrogen fuel cell vehicles, so FCVs. They announced in March of this year, in fact, that they're committing 10.3 billion euros this next year to the expansion of the fuel cell infrastructure, the hydrogen infrastructure. They clearly see the advantages of the hydrogen fuel cell, and the advantage, truly the advantage of hydrogen fuel cell, is the ability to extend the reach of a car. You don't have to worry about the battery discharging and then having to spend half an hour or 45 minutes recharging that battery. Mm-hmm. Literally, it's a 3-minute fill up on hydrogen. Right. And the hydrogen then can fuel the battery, which can then operate the car. So the wisdom at this juncture is that you're going to be looking at an integration of hydrogen fuel cells with electric cars. And those are going to provide both industrial transport, large-scale trucking, buses, lorries, all garbage trucks, anything that you can imagine, mm-hmm. are going to be operating on hydrogen fuel cells. So there are a number of companies worldwide that have made significant investments in this technology, and they see the future as being hydrogen. The challenges that they faced is the creation of distributed hydrogen, because to date there have only been two mechanisms by which hydrogen can be produced. One is steam methane reformation, and that's a heavily polluting and expensive process to generate hydrogen. For every ton of hydrogen you produce, you're producing between 12 and 16 tons of carbon dioxide. And then the other alternative is electrolysis, which is converting water into hydrogen. And that sounds great, except that the electricity that is being used for that electrolysis is often coming from coal-fired fuel power plants. Mm-hmm. And so, in effect, instead of creating a clean energy, you're just moving the CO2 footprint from the place where you're doing the electrolysis back to the power station. And so we've got a philosophy, which is, let's take a carbon neutral product, which is waste, and convert that into a clean stream of hydrogen that can then fuel cars and thereby eliminate landfill, eliminate unnecessary methane leaks, and generate a distributed hydrogen on the road where it needs to be used.
Yeah, so are you saying, to make it clear here, the outputs from your production there would be hydrogen and, did you say, electricity as well? Is that
right? And electricity as well, yes, of course.
Okay.
Because the fact is we're generating a synthesis gas, and that synthesis gas is composed of hydrogen and carbon monoxide. And the hydrogen we can use as a road fuel, the carbon monoxide we can use to power a gas generator set and produce electricity. So, in the interim before the demand for hydrogen is significant enough, we anticipate rolling out electrical generation capabilities, both in industrial parks and in neighborhoods. Our technology creates no smoke. We don't have a smokestack. We have no emissions. It's a zero emission. We create a light residue, depending upon the feedstock that we're using, that is handled properly, but is anywhere between, again, depending on the feedstock, could be as little as 5% by mass of the material that goes through the gasification process. So it dramatically reduces demands on landfill. It dramatically reduces the pollutants that incinerators and other means of rubbish eradication use, and we produce clean electricity and we produce clean hydrogen.
Yeah, and you mentioned there, so it's at what level are you at the moment? I mean, you mentioned it's modular, so it can be expanded, but so at what level are you at the moment, and so, are you commercially doing this at the moment? Please.
Yeah. So, Justin, we're just turning the corner from R&D into our commercial phase. We're operating at the Thornton Science Park in Chester, in conjunction with the University of Chester. We're in conversations with Peel's Protos facility up in Chester about a commercial operation there. And we're looking at other opportunities to roll out the technology on a commercial basis. We currently have a 1 to 3 ton per day demonstration unit at the University of Chester, and we'll be inviting investors up to take a look at it in operation. And we anticipate the recommissioning of that unit imminently. And full-scale operations to begin there shortly. So the next steps for us are really to initiate the design engineering for the first commercial 25-ton per day unit.
Yeah, wow. And how long do you think that will take, roughly?
We're aiming at breaking ground on that first unit within the next 8 months.
Okay, wow. I mean, you know, it's one of these things that you can't deny. It's in the perfect place. You are getting waste and you're generating clean energy from it, which is like a clean energy, you know, a dream, really, isn't it?
Indeed. We feel like we're it's a confluence of perfect events, and we're doing something that's worthwhile for our world. One of the feedstocks that we're able to handle exceptionally well is both end-of-life tires, for which there simply hasn't been a reasonable solution to date. And of course, the plastics in our waste stream. Plastics in our waste stream are finding their way into our oceans in alarming amounts. And so we've got a solution to eliminate those plastics from the waste stream and to capture the calorific value. You know, it's been estimated that the weight of plastic in our ocean is going to exceed the weight of fish in our ocean by 2050. And so if we continue the route that we're on. And so conventional mechanisms by which the elimination of plastic from as waste from the waste stream have simply not worked. And we've got a solution to resolve that. And we're going to be working with a number of parties to address that, and specifically to help address the significant problems facing our oceans from plastic pollution. So I hope that answered that.
Yeah. Well, do you know, I first had experience of the tire thing because I grew up, my father owned a car sales and a tire place where they used to fit tires. And obviously used to have a massive stack of tires
right.
every week. There's a pile up, and you sort of have to pay people to take it away and dispose of them safely, you know? So it was a huge problem and a massive cost. And so, I mean, as far as you're concerned, so where do you get these tires and these plastics from for your fuel stations?
So mate, every council collects tires and plastics. Every automobile recycler has tires and plastics. Everybody has a problem with tires and plastics. Mm. And we are the solution to tires and plastics. The fact is that the tires not only represent a huge cosmetic issue to our environment, but they represent breeding grounds for disease and mosquitoes. And so the ability to eliminate those, and again, to capture the energy value from that in a way that is non-polluting, that reduces the need to stack and store, and the fire hazards and the degradation and the leaching into our groundwater, all of those issues go away when one simply takes a tire apart and runs it through our gasifier. Mm-hmm. We from that tire can generate clean hydrogen and clean electricity. So we're looking at a very low carbon output from our processes. And it's, you know, it truly is a step. I think it is the bridge to the next generation of alternative energy.
Yeah, absolutely. Excellent stuff. Well, Keith, if someone's listening right now and they're thinking, listen, you know, everything is moving in the right direction for you, but they're not following you yet on Vox Markets.
Well, they should be.
Yeah, well, give them the three reasons, Keith. Short reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, which is a PHE ticker, by the way.
Yeah, PHE. I'll tell you what. Powerhouse Energy Group has created the distributed modular gasification philosophy and technology of our ultra high temperature gasifier, which is a disruptive technology. It is changing. It is going to change the waste to energy industry. There's nobody in the waste to energy industry that is converting waste into distributed hydrogen. We are. And that positions us to be literally at the forefront as all of these fuel cell vehicles and transport mechanisms begin to hit the road and be able to provide a cost-effective, environmentally responsible solution for towns, for industrial settings, for councils to address the issue of wanting and needing hydrogen and wanting and needing electricity, and the eradication of waste that was destined for landfill.
Excellent, Keith. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again very soon. Thank you very much.
Justin, yeah, it's a pleasure. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is founder of financialorbit.com. It's Chris Bailey. All right, Chris.
Hi there, Justin. Hi. Yeah, I'm not too bad. Actually, I'm a bit shattered, to be honest, because this week, 46% of the FTSE 100 by market cap is reporting their results, and a mere 38% of the S&P 500 in the States are doing the same. So I'm a little bit busy, to be honest.
Yeah, well, I did read that yesterday, and saying some of the big hitters tomorrow. It's obviously, yes, I was reading this, tomorrow we're reporting. And so I thought, well, Chris will cover a few of those, which I'm glad to get you on. It's good timing today. So
what are we
looking at? I mean, should we go alphabetical? Because I don't know why, but I saw a big drop in AstraZeneca, AZN, which is 15% for a FTSE 100 stock is a lot of money you lost off the table,
right,
isn't it?
Now, absolutely. And I'm sure loads of listeners have got shares in this one, because at the moment it's printing a 7% yield. There's been lots of hope and hype around it. But here's the harsh reality. A pharmaceutical company, it's dependent over time on treatments and new products. And guess what? Sometimes these trials that they do to check that these products are still okay and good, they don't work. And this is what's happened this morning. Mm-hmm. They've got a big lung cancer treatment. It's called Mystic. which might be an apt name given its mystical ability not to create.
I saw someone tweet that. I must say, you know, a very odd tweet, and I thought, what are they talking about? So
That's sort of the special code name, etc., for it. Now, Mystic's actually done some good stuff for AstraZeneca in other areas. This was in lung cancer, obviously a very serious problem, very big problem. And they could have really pushed on aggressively. People were talking about 10 or 15% boost in earnings for AstraZeneca if this drug had proved up. The trouble is, it didn't. And hence why AstraZeneca shares are down 15, 16% as when I last looked. Because, you know, the old rule of thumb is whatever they might add to your earnings, and as I say, most people were thinking about 10 or 15% up. You can lose that in terms of a share price fall if it doesn't prove up. And that's what's happened this morning. Mm-hmm. The AstraZeneca numbers otherwise were typical AstraZeneca for recent years. I mean, you and I, Justin, are of a slightly older vintage maybe. And we remember the heyday of AstraZeneca back in the 80s when actually they sort of came together with Astra, a Swedish company, and Zeneca, which was the sexy bit of ICI. They came together to form this massive, exciting company. Unfortunately, the last 10 years or so, it's been dull as ditch water, low or no growth, patent expiries, and people have been picking up the dividend and thinking, well, let's hope that Pfizer come back, because obviously they made a bid for it 3 years ago, but were told where to go. But I have to say, and I've said this before, I don't own AstraZeneca shares. I haven't for a long, long time. But I have to say that they should have bitten the hand off Pfizer 3 years ago. 50 plus quid a share. You could have put that money to work doing something else, or probably quite remuneratively in the markets over the last 3 years or so. And let's not forget, the pound isn't what it was 3 years ago either. So I have to say, all in all, a bit of a mess. Don't bottom fish AstraZeneca. Just because it's down 15, 16%, don't immediately think, my God, it's cheap. The reality is, isn't. However, and it is a small however, I would say the speculative aspect around AstraZeneca has probably pushed a notch up, just because not only is the pound now quite cheap, but also the fact that people like Pfizer may say, well, let's have another look.
Yeah, do you know what? I remember that takeover deal being announced, and he was on BBC TV, and the boss of AstraZeneca standing there, sounding quite arrogant about saying, no, we think we can generate better value for our shareholders than that deal. And at the time, I thought, God, he sounds quite confident, overly confident, a bit cocky even, you know? And part of me thought, I don't think he believes what he's saying there. I think he's thinking they're going to come back and offer him a better deal. And turns out they should have taken the offer. Hindsight's a wonderful thing, you know?
It is. And of course, that CEO has been in the news recently because there's been lots of rumours that he's going to shift, actually move on to another company, an Israeli US pharmaceutical company called Teva. But you know, he said he isn't moving. But all you can say is, unfortunately, drug reversals, pipeline reversals like this, it's not a good thing. And I'm sure if you're an AstraZeneca shareholder today, you're probably a bit sore. What would I do? Look, I think if you hold it already, you probably hold on. The 7% yield is not under immediate threat, and the speculative aspect probably has gone up a notch, as I said. But would I be piling bunches of new money into this? Absolutely not. There are so many other things to be doing at this moment in time, and you're very dependent on a well-booted US suitor coming in and wanting to take it over. But as I say, on an underlying basis, it's a mess there. There's really low or no growth at all.
Yeah. Okay, all right. What else are you looking at, Chris?
So a couple of other names, going from one big pharma company, a 7% yielder, to another one, another 7% yielder, and that's Royal Dutch Shell. Again, you know, a company which is in every single pension fund in the whole world, it seems. Numbers there were good today. Now, obviously, we've seen the oil price go up over the last year. You know, obviously, it troughed just over a year ago. And that has its impact, sort of a mechanical impact, if you like, on Shell's earnings, as it would do for every single oil and gas company around the world. There's a couple of good bits in Shell's numbers today. The shares are up about 1% when I last looked. And the reason why is because the BG, British Gas deal that they did a couple of years ago now, is continuing to bed down. And it will give them good options going forward. What everybody worried about was whether they'd stretch themselves way too far in terms of their finances, their balance sheet. But looking at the data today, gearing, that they're sort of there, that they're borrowing effectively as a proportion of their equity, is going down. They have managed to cover the dividend through their cash flow operations over the last year. And these are a couple of ticks in the boxes. So all I would say is, from the Shell numbers, complex, showing some benefit from higher oil prices over the last 12 or 15 months, saying all the right things in terms of cost suppression and stuff like that. And it still looks if that 7% yield is covered. So I would say all in all, not too bad. Not surprised to see the share slightly up today. And my guess is a reasonable long-term hold if you want sort of a mega cap, which is paying you a decent dividend.
Okay, marvellous stuff, yeah. And, do you know what? I'm just thinking, though, about all companies. And, you know, the announcement from the government, yes, it was announced a while back, actually, about their ambition to be, you know, having sort of diesel and petrol-free cars by 2040, and other governments around the world doing the same. I'm just wondering that sentiment. I know they're in gas as well, Roald Dahl, but I just wonder if the sentiment will start to, you know, batter these companies a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a fair point, and strategically they've got an issue. All I'd say is, what we would say is retail oil sales are very small, and it's dwarfed massively to a factor of 60 or 70 to 1 by industrial sales. So if you want to, now, even in those industrial areas, things like fossil fuel usage is obviously under pressure because people are maybe using renewable sources or becoming more energy efficient or the like. But the reality is that number one, the emerging markets are still demanding more oil and gas, which is good. Number two is that it's hard for these companies or companies around the world to find new sources of supply and becoming more expensive and the like. And so therefore, a company like Shell with lots of sources and longer term investments, they're in the box seat as long as they run it well and can finance everything. So all in all, not too bad. 7% yield, long-term assets, balance sheet under control. I'd much rather have this one than Zeneca at this moment in time.
Yeah, it's funny, I was listening to an interview today about the head of Ford in the UK, and he was saying that, I mean, you know, other car companies have put a date, a hard stop date on when they'll stop doing petrol and diesel, and Ford hasn't done that. And he said the reason why we haven't done that is because the demand from the customer isn't there yet, and we will do it when the demand is there. And I saw another report saying, listen, these governments around the world saying that putting these dates will not kill the oil industry. What will kill it is a natural market. People are generally, moving over to electric cars and other sources. So, I mean, yeah, it's only 1%, I think, of the overall car market is electric. But slowly that'll creep up and it'll hit a tipping point at one point, And
yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, and that's way. And a lot of people are saying that's way before 2040. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see.
Trust innovation. I mean, think about things like mobile phone adoption. How quick that was. How that's crowding out fixed line. And matters like that, innovation, you've always got to back it. So don't worry, I think Royal Dutch Shell will still be around in 50 or 100 years time, probably doing something a little bit different, but there you go.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, marvellous. And you can't go without not covering sort of Lloyds, surely.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Lloyds is the other one. 5% yielder for Lloyds. So again, a very popular share amongst the shareholding public. Look, shares are down 1.7% when I last looked today. I thought that's a bit rude. I think the numbers generally were quite good. They've hiked the interim dividend by 18%. The capital base, that's the sort of their capability to generate capital, is going up. They've said a couple of comments about, yes, it's a tough old world out there still. They're having to compensate some mortgage customers. A few iffy things around the edges. But overall, when I run the numbers on this one, it's actually looking pretty attractive. So I would say, if you look at those mega caps we've talked about today, my super summary would be AstraZeneca, chill. If you're a holder, don't buy any more, just chill and await developments. Royal Dutch Shell, solid long-term hold, and you could even buy it now if you don't own it. I think most people probably do already. And as for Lloyds, I think it's an outright buy at these prices. I can see 80 pence a share plus. I think it's cruising around about 67 pence at the moment. I think there's upside on this one, and I'd be a buyer today on it. I thought the numbers were absolutely all right, and there's a bit of value there and a 5% yield to boot.
Yeah, when is that date for? They put a date now on PPI, haven't they? When they stop, I don't know what that is. Is it 2019? I don't know what it is.
PPI. Yeah, I believe so. I don't know the precise date. They've stopped. Obviously, they've been putting through impairments very regularly over the last few years. I think it's fair to say that the market is up to date now on that fear factor, and thankfully, I'm receiving less calls on it. I don't have any. I've told people continuously over the last few years I haven't had any, but thank God. people are now stopping phoning on this debacle. So I think the banks, what you'll find is they're having to stop worrying about it less and less. So don't, you know, no special impairments this time on that front.
Yeah, extra stuff. Marvellous, Chris, thanks for that, and speak next week, fella.
Sounds good, thanks a lot.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They were, at five, Blenheim Natural Resources, BNR. Of course, chatting to Mark there from Blenheim yesterday on the podcast. At four, always there, Ascent Resources, AST ticker. At three, I3 Energy, that's I3E ticker. At two, UK Oil and Gas, the rise, that sounds phenomenal. And I covered that on the chart with Nicola Duke earlier on. And also, another one I covered on the chart is Premier African Minerals, the most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. That's PREM. Okay, top five most liked RSs. At five, Blenheim Natural Resources, Holdings and Company. At four, Zenith Energy, ZEN, as production restored at Well M66 in Azerbaijan. At three, N4 Pharma, N4P's ticker. Update on Sildenafil. Sildenafil. Clinical plans. I know that's not how to say it. I do know how to say it in my head, but I can't say it. Sildenafil. Clinical plans there. An update on that there from N4 Pharma. It was third most liked RS. At two, I had the guys on the podcast. Georgian Mining Corporation. Significant resource upgrade at Kavimba Bolnese East. And number one most liked RS was from Premier African Minerals. Zulu Lithium Project drilling update. So they are had number one most liked RS and number one most followed. So there we are. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.